super duper.
Yeah, Lace Curtain finishing up today's program from the Falling Running EP. We heard Running 2.
Running 2 what?
Running number 2. Yeah, before that,
so
Earth
that's the second
Dies
album?
Burning was the second version of the song called Running. So they do two versions of the song called Falling, Falling 1, Falling 2. Then they did two versions of the song called Running. And we heard Running version 2. Before that, Earth Dies Burning did The Flowers of Romance from Songs from the Valley of the Bored Teenager 1981 to 1984, featuring Brad Lehner in there somewhere. The Red Crayola from 1979, Soldier Talk, the LP, with pretty much all of Pere Ubu on the record. Of course, Laura Logic in there as well. The song, An Opposition Spokesman.
Daddy.
Yeah.
I want to play Rhythm.
That is a cool sound, actually.
It's a marker cap closing on it.
Oh, sweet. Well, you know, we got to hurry, though, because Andrea is coming in just a moment to do Too Much Information, filling in for Benjamin Walker this week. We opened that set with music from Guru Guru.
Loud.
Sure was. 1970, UFO, the debut record. Next time, see you at the Dalai Lama. Lila, next time I'll see you at the Dalai Lama.
What's the Dalai Lama?
Oh, we'll talk about it later. This is Freeform Radio, everybody. Thank you for listening. Scott and my daughter, Lila, joining you today. I will see you in 2 weeks. Not sure who'll be here next week. This is Freeform Radio.
Wait.
East Orange, WMFU Mount
Hope.
Oh, we can't talk about that.
No, just say that my birthday.
Okay, happy birthday to Lila 1 week from today. But we can't talk about the party. What if they all show up? WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope.
But they won't know where it is.
That's right, because we're going to stop talking. In Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online, WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Too Much Information is coming right up.
Bye.
Coming up on the show, a look at the ways romances end. I sit down with the guy I'm currently dating.
I treat you right and I'm a good man.
And we negotiate how we'd like our breakup to go down.
I mean, do you not want to break up with someone or be broken up with in person, ever?
Plus, an imagining of the most intimate thing you can do on a first date.
Oh my god, Evel Knievel. Smoking a cigarette on the edge of a balcony.
And Grandma Phyllis will make you cry. Stay with us.
My heart is beating. Feel like an o'clock. My heart is beating. You can hear it talk. Beep, beep. Beep, beep. My heart goes beep, beep, beep. Beep, beep. Beep, beep. My heart goes beep, beep, beep. You can answer my
Too Much Information. I'm Andrea Salenzi, filling in for the happy newlywed Benjamin Walker, who is off honeymooning in Italy with his beautiful bride. You've heard about her in past episodes of the show. I recommend listening back to their cross-country road trip from the America episode on the WFMU archives. This is the last in the series of 4 fill-in shows about dating. Next week, Benjamin will return and speak with Alyssa Court, author of Republic of Outsiders, about the power of amateurs, dreamers, and rebels. Tonight is the last in the series. It's all about endings. What's at stake when you love someone? And part of this conversation is also about this fill-in series ending. So let's look back at the journey we've been on for these past three fill-in shows. The first one, we heard me tell my grandma Phyllis about that time I tried to get picked up in a bar.
Just look at them and say, what a crock.
They made fun of my cell phone case.
What?
I saw the Asians on the train with that.
Really? Only Asians had this cell phone case? Got it.
These might be perfectly nice guys if they weren't in the bar bullshitting each other and you.
Yeah, I don't know. I said weird stuff too.
Talk to me like your stepfather.
I don't know. He's just...
Talk to me like your stepfather. Like, up until now, have you guys ever had, like, a defining moment as friends?
Then my roommate told the story about the time he got his laptop stolen by a girl he brought home. And the whole interview turned just a little confrontational.
I don't know. I mean, I have some tats as well. So we were talking about that.
I don't think anyone actually calls them tats. Start that over, say.
I call them tats. What are you talking about? I just call them tats.
You just sound stupid. Just don't call them tats. No.
Why are you telling me I sound stupid?
I want you to come off as cool.
They're pretty natty tats.
And then Jim the Poet asked me out during my interview with dating expert Keir Attic. And we got drinks and recorded the entire date at Rudy's.
Well, it was funny because, like, the first time I talked to you after I did the show or whatever, like, my impression was, here's this woman, and she's really nice, but she's, I don't know, a little shy, maybe a little meek, maybe a little understated or something like that. But she's great, pretty, like, great, amazing, stuff like that.
Meek? Did you just call
but
me
But that's what
meek?
I'm saying, that you're a tiger. How do people not know this about you immediately?
But things didn't work out between us, in part because my grandma didn't improve, which she reminded me of last night while we were chatting on the phone about her funeral.
And remember what's supposed to be played on my way out?
Oh my God, I forgot.
The Triumphal March from Aida.
Okay, got it.
Da 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 da. I really want that. I want to go out in a large note.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
I know.
Anyhow.
So I do another radio show tomorrow.
Yeah?
One of the things I'm going to record tonight for the show tomorrow is talking with the guy I'm currently dating.
But not the guy Jim. That's not the one you're dating. Not that 40-year-old loser.
He's not a loser. He's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, but he ain't a winner. He's an also-ran.
You're a bully.
All right. So, who is this guy you're seeing?
His name is Matt, and he works in politics.
Uh-huh. He's Jewish.
Yep.
Okay. So and you're going to record something with him?
Yeah, I'm going to record us talking and him. I'm going to basically come up with a breakup negotiation. So all relationships come to an end except for the one that doesn't. So chances are this one's going to come to an end at some point. So I want to go over the terms for our breaking up.
You really think it's not going to last?
Yeah, maybe.
Would you like it to last?
I guess I have to answer that.
But you're going to negotiate the terms of your breakup.
Yes. Have you ever had a breakup?
Yeah. I did. Many, many years ago, I think I wrote about him, and I may have mentioned him. His name was Zilch. That was his nickname, Zilch. And I met him while I was in college. He was 10 years older than me. And he was working at the Speech and Hearing Center installing equipment. And I got to know him, and he was very cautious. He called me for days and days and days and days on a public pay phone in our dormitory. If you can think back before cell phones, and people couldn't have phones in their rooms, and he'd call me every day, and I'd stand in the back hall of the dormitory talking into this pay phone, this wall-mounted pay phone. Got to have the whole picture there. My arm is falling off from holding up the receiver and not having any place to sit. And we would talk, and eventually he asked me out, and we did. And then he took a job in California. Well, if there's anything that can kill a romance, it's being in California. And, of course, I always knew that the age difference was not suitable. I was kind of flattered by it, but I always knew it wasn't suitable. And he was 10 years older than me.
Wow.
So, I mean, I was 20, and he was 30. And he'd call me from California, but then the calls got very expensive, and he stopped. And I actually broke it up that year. And one of the reasons that I started going out with Grandpa again was that I came home, and I had broken up with this guy over the telephone in California.
And at that point, Grandma's phone line started breaking up, so I'm going to continue the story with help from my co-host. Welcome to the show today, Laura.
Hi.
You know Laura from helping produce 7 Second Delay. So basically, what happens from here is she and Zilch break up, and then she tells Grandpa about it. And when she tells my Grandpa Gil about it, he says, well, why can't we date? Why haven't you ever thought of me? And she says, well, you got no sex appeal. They'd been friends since they were 8 years old. And apparently at that moment, he probably like took her in his arms or something. But she tells that story over and over again. And at that point, he brought on the sex appeal and they quickly got engaged. Although they did wait till marriage. And she made a point of telling me all about that over and over and over again.
I'm sad that cut out.
I know. It was a really good story. Oh, and years later, she called Zilch to catch up and, you know, reflect on the good old times. And Zilch said he never married.
Wow.
He never found another love. She was it for him.
Do we find out why he's named Zilch?
It was a nickname.
But do we know why?
Part of his last name was probably like Zilch Nickel. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm just imagining like a zero bank account balance kind of Zilch.
Apparently he was an audio engineer in Hollywood.
Wow.
And she would see his name in the credits all the time.
Hmm.
So they call up. Zilch says he never remarried. And then years later she gets a call from his nephew saying that Zilch has passed. And she was in his phone book, so he thought he would call. And then years after that, Grandma and I are at a psychic, and the psychic tells her that there's 3 hot guys up in, you know, the afterlife waiting for her. So that'd be my Grandpa Gil, my Grandpa Saul. And she says number 3 must be Zilch.
Yeah.
Who gets the first?
3 hotties in a lifetime, too. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and Zilch was an older man, 10 years older. So now we're about to hear something that's incredibly intimate. We're about to hear an interview I did in my bedroom with the guy I'm currently dating.
Andrea the Brave.
I don't know. I don't know how brave it was. It's like the wimpiest thing in the world to be like, I need a breakup agreement. How is this going to end? Tell me now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I had him over. I made dinner, some homemade pasta, and he brought the wine, and he talked about how things are going. And this all kind of started, well, you guys will hear it, but
anyway. How did you couch it to him that you wanted to have this conversation?
Oh, well, it started with him saying, oh, your next show's about how things end. Does that mean you're going to break up with me? And I said, no, I have this other idea, though. And the intro to that was Airbnb.
Mm.
Okay, let's...
I guess we'll see what that means.
Yeah. let's hear my conversation with Matt. Recorded in our pajamas.
makes you worthy of this honorable position?
I treat you right and I'm a good man.
Okay, so Matt and I were just having a moment and we are looking at a page of Airbnb.com. It's the little cabin in the Catskills that we're thinking about renting.
Ferndale. I believe it's Ferndale.
It's in Ferndale. That we're considering renting for $80 a night for a little romantic getaway in October.
It's like 2 months away.
And we've been dating for?
1 month.
So can we make a contract like that? Like, how do you decide if this is a contract we want to make? You are for this.
Totally. Because I can just tell. I mean, I know what's happened so far. And I can tell I like you. And I like you in a way that I don't like other girls. And so it's not a hard decision for me.
And I'm hesitating because I don't want us to feel locked down because of this. Like, if things are supposed to end, I want to feel a freedom to let them organically end without feeling like we have to make it until the romantic getaway weekend.
But I don't think of this as a thing that will, like, if something came up where I was like, oh God, I have to end this, I wouldn't be like, but we have that $80 a night cabin up in Ferndale. that's not going to hold me down. Like, if we had to end it, I'm sure we could find a way to be like, oh, well, you take the cabin. You know, it'll be like, this is our prenup, and we'll just have to agree ahead of time who gets the cabin.
Okay, so who gets the cabin? I'm not saying I'm going to break up with you right now. You said...
Thank you.
When I told you I was doing a show about breakups, you were like, you're not going to break up with me just for the show. No, of course not. But I do like the idea of cornering you right now and both of us going over like how we'd like to be broken up with. So I don't hurt you and you don't hurt me. That's what this is about.
I mean, I know in the past, the easiest breakups have always been quick and painful, but in person. And I do think, I don't know why, but I think it's important to break up with someone in person. You know, it's less cowardly, I think.
I don't know if I agree.
What, you think you should be able to text someone and be like, hey, this isn't working anymore. You should be able to G-chat them and be like, hey, maybe you shouldn't come over tonight because we're done. LOL.
I don't know. I just think in person is like so... difficult, like...
But you can also be there for some... Because if you're breaking up with somebody, especially if you've been together a long time and you actually really care about someone and you're breaking up with them, it's helpful to be there for them at the same time in a perverse kind of way because it's, you know, you're hurting them, but you can also be there to help them a little bit in the transition away.
You wouldn't be helping me at all. I would hate you.
For being there when I break up with you?
Yeah, you're like the last person I'd want to be comforted by in that moment.
And yet, maybe one of the only people.
No, when someone breaks up with you, you suddenly go from the energy of like, touch me all the time right now, to like, don't come in with 3 feet of me. This is, get away. Like, you're the enemy in that moment. Why would I want you anywhere near me?
I guess it depends on what the relationship was like leading up to that moment. If you're feeling like that, then I think then the relationship up until that point must have really been going downhill. Right? Like, I mean...
No, it's like a switch. When you go from you are the person who I... You are my like a close friend of mine who I share a bed with sometimes to like...
Is that what relationships are to you?
Maybe. What are they? How's your definition different?
Well, I mean, that's definitely one level of relationship. I'm sure that's like entry level relationship 101. You know, we're friends and we also sleep in the same bed. But then presumably,
when convenient, yeah.
You know, once you start introducing topics like love and, you know, the possibility of spending the rest of your life with someone.
Stop talking.
I'm going to hit pause right there. I did actually hit pause in the recorder right then, Laura, because I realized that I had turned the air conditioning off in the room, and I was, like, sweating, like, a lot, and the audio engineer in me, like gave in and let the human in me turn on the air conditioning because it was really hot in there.
Was the audio engineer back now not letting you play more tape with the air conditioner behind it, or is that the
no, actually we turned on the air conditioning, we continued the conversation. Oh, okay. So all the audio from here on out will have an
AC. Nice hum.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it gets louder and quieter. But what do you think about the progress of that conversation?
Well, what did you want out of it? Did you want, like, a piece of paper? Just with, you know, terms on it?
Well, we kind of have terms. We say we're exclusively dating. We don't say we're boyfriend-girlfriend. Because I'm having a hard time with that title. I haven't had a boyfriend in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the moment you have a boyfriend, you have to get unboyfriended. And, like, how does that happen? I didn't even remember how you got boyfriended in the first place. And then now that I'm in it, I don't know how you tell people that that's what happened. I don't know how to come out as someone in a relationship to people in my life. So it just seems easier to say, oh, we're just not seeing anyone. And maybe this will be something. And it's really great.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is a lazy explanation. But maybe because of technology forcing us to label things in our life, that has morphed your brain a little bit. Because I don't remember ever... I mean, I have only, in this relationship that I'm in, made a point to change my relationship status. And that was on an arbitrary day that we both agreed we would do it. And we have chosen it as our anniversary, even though it was not the beginning point of our relationship or a particularly significant one. It was just the day we were like, oh, we should probably do that.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's your anniversary?
Yeah, because there was no other formal one, because there isn't always, right? And it's sort of the same thing with this. Like, in previous relationships, I remember moving from... person you call a bunch or see out a lot or make time to hang out with, where one of you just risks it a little and calls the other one that in front of each other, you know? And then it either takes or it doesn't, right? Either that's the conversation where it's done, or it's just sort of floats and it's okay. And then there's another thing like that a little bit later, where it's just assumed that you're going to see each other that weekend because you do every weekend, right? Mm. It's just sort of, that's been my experience. But yeah. I feel like I have also...
People don't say... I mean, I guess in your case, you did kind of say, let's be Facebook official.
But we were way in a relationship then. Like, it was a belated change of Facebook status. Like, we were on a long road trip together. It was not a, risk in any way. And people commented on it like, oh, I didn't know. Because it was so obvious. We had been on 3 road. You know, it was like, you know, it was just something you had to do. We just picked a day to do it because you have to just do it. I guess you have to. You don't really have
to. So things just organically got more serious. You didn't have to stop and, like, talk about it.
That's typically been the case for me. But yeah. I'm also a maybe to a fault one who lets that happen generally. Like, I let an environment or a relationship. I take less control than you do, I think.
Huh.
In it.
I guess looking back at the audio, like, this was really controlling that I... And you're going to hear, like, in this next section, basically what happens is I'm starting to get really tired. I was very hot just a little bit ago. And I'm like, I just kind of get on this loop of, like, how does anyone know if they should be with the person that they're with? I feel like I'm in this thing with him. And we really like each other, and there's no one else I want to hang out with, but I don't know why it is. Like, it's not that we're what makes us good or what doesn't. It just seems to be, like, my fear is that it's just convenient that this is mm-hmm. someone who wants to be with me and I would like to be with him, and we both just happen to be single right now. It doesn't feel like there's some larger, greater compatibility where it's like, oh, this man is custom made for me. It's just like, this is really nice right now.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like someone's custom made for you, like out of the, like God took a chisel and there mm-hmm. they are?
No. I think it would be weird and not that fun, probably.
I don't know. I was looking, we're later going to be talking about our other friend, Laura Mayer, and I was looking at Laura and her partner, Danny, and I just felt like this man was like, someone was at hard at work thinking about her matching puzzle piece, and that's where he came from.
I think that that's totally true about them, and I a lot of other people. There are perfect matches, but I don't think it's because they are, because they fight about, not Laura and Danny, but humans fight about things like dishes, and in your scenario, like even things like that would probably be worked out. And even though I feel like I am perfectly matched, we fight about dishes. We don't fight about dishes. We have different ideas about things like dishes.
But like when it comes to like your relationship with creativity, how you like to spend your time, your degree of going out and doing stuff versus staying in, like the stuff you like to listen to, the art you're inspired by, like I feel like there's larger cosmic things.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you figure out if that's in place or not. But
yeah,
it's a process.
Yeah, it's like a negotiation.
So I thought I'd just torture Matt with all of these questions I was having.
I mean, he was down. That's something.
Yeah, and he like continues to give me back this like kind, reasonable, supportive, we're going to figure this out. And then he took things to that terrifying next level. But, well, let's hear where the rest of this conversation.
Let's get terrified.
Go. You just seem very hesitant to be in a relationship.
I am.
And yet here we are, exclusively dating.
You're grim when you say that.
I think it's a funny term.
I'm not calling you my boyfriend yet.
I know.
But I do think it in my head sometimes. It's weird.
It's okay.
I'm just like, I am hesitant about the boyfriend-girlfriend stuff, just because I feel like once you get in it, you have to get out of it. And if you're not that, then you don't have to worry about it. Okay, I don't want to do interview time anymore. How do we get out of this?
We have sex while filming a radio show and listen to it later.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Do you like listening to us talk while we're doing this?
No, all I can think about is all the editing work ahead of me. It's not that much fun.
No.
And well, I don't.
Let's turn it off.
I haven't made up my mind if we're a cute couple or not.
If we're a cute couple? Mm-hmm. Oh, like for the air?
No, for anywhere, for anything.
Oh. What do you mean?
I don't know, like, how matched we are.
Yeah? From the outside looking in or within?
It's probably within, imagining the outside looking in.
I mean, I feel like when we're together, I feel matched. And when we're not together and I want to be with you, I feel matched. What's left? Talk to me.
I just feel like... It's just hard to know who you're supposed to be with.
Okay.
And I feel like when you... I'm just not used to, like, being with someone and then having to tell my friends and family about that person. It's just, like, a weird thing where it's, like, normally that person's a secret. And the idea that, like, that this person could be someone I start introducing to people is, like, a weird process. Because it's, like, saying to everyone in your life, like, here's who I think is good for me.
You don't want to do that.
Like it in my own little world. I like just like my own little bubble with you and I'm not worrying about anything else. Now I have to decide if we want to commit to 2 more months by signing up for this cabin.
Do it. Let's do it.
You do?
We're not committing to being together for 2 more months. We're saying, should we still be together in 2 more months? We should do this awesome thing. And because unless we're never able to plan in the future because we're always afraid we might not be together in 2 more months, well, then it's kind of going to limit our options about what we can do together. And there's no harm in saying, yeah, well, if we're together in October, we should go to Farmvale, New York, and be in this great cabin.
Let's go to Farmdale.
Farmvale. I'm open to it.
All right, I'm back in the studio on WFMU with my friend Laura.
Hey, everybody.
Andrea. We were laughing, I think. We were laughing a lot at that.
You have just booked the thing. Did you book it?
Yeah, I booked
it. I'm really glad.
I know. It'll be fun. You can't really screw up a time in the woods. And
no.
Yeah.
2 months also isn't a long time.
I guess
to
so.
Get to.
It's whatever. It's twice what we've been together so far, and there's a lot still to learn together. And I don't know. I don't know how you ever know if you write for anyone. And I actually, I'm not going to play the audio from it, but I did talk to Grandma about that. And she gave me, this was a game changer for me. She was like, Andrea, you're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And, no one's perfect. And she's like, and you also never totally know anyone. So, good relationship advice from my grandma.
Yeah, it is.
She's like, I'm so sorry to tell you this. You're not perfect. You're not going to find someone else who's perfect.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know, it's totally fine.
Do you ever doubt your relationship with Daryl?
No, never.
Because it's just so right.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not even that it's right or perfect. It's just we met at a good time, and we have similar outlooks and points of view about things, and we're comfortable with each other. I mean, it's very basic stuff. Plus, he's brilliant and sweet and easy and funny. So
I like
he's
him.
He's got it all.
Yeah.
And brilliant, tall. He's sweet, extremely tall. but yeah, I mean, it is a hard question to answer, but I don't even think it's a question worth asking because it's not, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you know that something is right or wrong. I mean, you just don't do the leveled up thing in a relationship.
What makes this hit home for me is just the idea, we're talking about endings today and everything has to end and when it does, it hurts. And even if you spend your whole life with someone, everything ends and it's going
to
hurt.
Right. So you're just averse to the vulnerability of it.
Yeah, living alone with cats, that would be fine.
Yeah.
I really like cats.
Well, and you also have this brilliant example in Grandma Phyllis that, even if you've been left alone a couple of times, she's not really alone. She has you and hundreds of friends, and she makes more every day on the bus, she told me, this weekend. So it's not, and her life is not sad, you know? It's anything but.
Yeah. Well, we have a story from her now, and it's the story of when my grandpa Saul passed away. And it's a heavy one, so get out your tissues. It's really heavy, actually. And what I love about the story is she goes in and out of talking about just some boring day-to-day logistics and hospital stuff, and then it gets really serious. It's really heavy. And just to remind everyone, Grandpa Saul's, she met him online using a website called classifieds2000.com. And then they had a wonderful 7 years together, and they would count their relationship. They would count the months as years.
Wow.
That's amazing. And it made it, they would say, oh, we've been together for 15 years, when it had only been two. It was easier for them that way.
What year did they meet?
Oh, my gosh. 1997 or something.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Early days of internet dating.
Yeah, and to catch people up, Grandpa went in for a heart surgery and had a hard time recovering. It kind of turned into pneumonia and all this other stuff, and it was kind of an elective surgery, and that was part of the challenge of this. So, okay, we're going to listen to my grandma now, telling the story of the day my grandpa died.
The day he died, he told me he was going to die. He told me it was time for the 99-year sleeping pill. And I denied it. But I shouldn't have, because I saw how frail and fragile he was. And I knew that that morning they had needed to give him oxygen. That afternoon I was very upset, and I was ranting and raving to the charge nurse. We were coming up with all kinds of plans, including I was beginning to wonder if I shouldn't be able to somehow take him home and do that tube feeding myself or have people come in. But early that evening when I walked back up to his room, because I used to spend like 12-hour days there, I walked back up to his room and he wasn't in his bed. I looked for him, and he had somehow gotten out of his bed and walked on his own to the bathroom. And I complimented him on the fact that he had been able to do that without using a walker. And I said, see, you're so pessimistic about it, but this is really very good. Somehow I chose to forget that quite often dying people have a last surge of energy. And in retrospect, that's what it was. He was sitting on the toilet. I went to help him up, and the aide came and said she would take care of him and get him into bed, cleaned up, and start his feeding. And as usual, the minute he would hit the bed, he'd fall asleep. So I left. And I went back to the charge nurse and was totally exhausted mentally and physically. And we talked some more, and it was going to be gangbusters on Monday, that things just had to change. And I signed out of the hospital at about 7:30 that night, went home, did some email. So I was sending out emails to people rather than talking on the phone. Ate something, I guess, and took my sleeping pill. I was on the phone with my friend Dorothy. It was about 10 or 10:30, waiting for the pill to take effect. And I said to her, he's going to die. He's just so bad. And during the conversation, the interrupt sounded, and it was a supervisor at the nursing home telling me that he had passed away. So, I live with regret that I didn't go back up the hall to kiss him goodnight, because I knew he was out. I don't know. But people say, you know, people, they always try to say nice things. They suggested that he was just waiting for me to leave so he could die. I don't know. Whatever it is, he died. And I was alone in my apartment, drugged up, called my cousins, who were the only living relatives who were in the city, called his kids who were staying at my apartment in New Jersey, and went downstairs and told the good news to my doorman, good old John. And we sat and we waited together for my cousins to arrive. And we went off to the nursing home to say goodbye. They were very nice. They moved him into a private sitting room so I could have some moments alone. His body was still warm. I stretched out on the bed next to him, and I just held on to him. I really didn't say anything. He knew I loved him. I told him that every single day. And I knew he loved me. We were not perfect people. But as I joke, we were perfect for each other. And I had 8 years we were married. 1 year we fooled around. That was kind of fun. We traveled. We had some good times. I've almost forgiven him for insisting on having that second heart operation. But he knew more about his body than I did, and he knew. He was a smart man. At least I didn't have to deal with somebody comatose or Alzheimer's out of his head. I didn't have to sit next to his bed praying for him to die, to be released from the agony. He was lucid to that last minute. I'm grateful for that. That's about all I can say about that.
All right, this is a special fill-in show for Too Much Information. My name's Andrea, and I'm here with my friend Laura.
Hi.
And that was my grandma Phyllis talking about the day my grandpa Saul died.
It was beautiful.
I don't know how you move on from that.
Yeah.
From that piece of audio or that moment in your life. Either one. Both.
I think you forge ahead without thinking about it.
Yeah. I did. It is. Yeah.
Sometimes.
But she's back on Match.com, people.
Send your grandpas. Yeah.
Yeah. Grandpas, feel free to email Andrea at freemusicarchive.org.
But only the best grandpas.
Yeah.
As you can tell, she deserves the best grandpa.
It's true. Ugh. So now for the last leg of our journey for this special ending show, I have a really well-suited story coming up for you that Laura and I worked on together. And that's a real reason you're here, is we want to tell people about what we did.
Crazy weekend.
We participated in the KCRW radio race. Do you want to tell us what that is?
Sure.
Will I cue this up?
It's a challenge where you enter with a small team and they send you a theme in the morning on a day. And then you have 24 hours from then to turn in a piece up to 6 minutes on that theme. And it was nonfiction. And you had to create all of the audio within that 24-hour period. That basically, you had to create all the audio there. And then halfway through, they give a little additional bonus, if you include this thing, you'll get bonus points thing, which I think we actually omitted. But the theme this year, well, this is the first year they've done it, and it was the last thing you'd expect.
That was actually
the theme. So do we want to talk about...
Well, we went on all sorts of paths to get to what we were going to do.
Yeah, we had a couple of failed false starts. There was a period where Andrea was, I don't know if you're familiar with the broadcast option on OkCupid, but she put up a message, I wouldn't say very provocative, but somewhat provocative message.
It said, come on over and tell me your best story. Come to my place and tell me a great story.
And she got 50 messages in 2 minutes.
We just, they just, it was like my phone was like buzz, buzz, buzz.
Yeah. So that's how you do it. If you have no standard for what the dude is on the other end, women of America, use the broadcast option. You will meet someone. I don't know if they'll be good. They probably will not be based on the phone calls that we made to half of them after that. Anyway, there were no stories there.
The worst thing we did is I said I was at a coffee shop and we never went to that coffee shop.
So who knows how many, you know,
I hope two lonely guys found each other there. I hope they both just could compare notes and talk about how lonely they were together.
Well, I like the idea of them walking around the little coffee shop, pointing at every woman and going, Andrea? Andrea? Andrea?
Are you?
Andrea?
My
and
favorite,
then none of them.
My favorite guy I was corresponding with that day was Hot Boy Bushwick.
Yeah.
Hello, beautiful. I have a story you would love hearing. Trust me.
I already
H-U-D,
don't.
I'm Anthony. Hit me up. I'll be right there of star, 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 true. BTW, you are beautiful in my eyes.
Oh, yeah. Right, which we realized is something that dudes tend to say. Well, I mean, lunkheads say that. But it's also not a compliment.
No matter what anyone says, I find you beautiful.
It's not all a those compliment. Other people. You're beautiful in my eyes, you know? It's not a compliment. Stop saying it.
Okay. By the way, you're beautiful in my eyes. I'll show when you're looking in them. Age, you hit me up.
Also, and his profile is a thing of beauty.
Oh, my God. I can't. I'll try to get it up on a playlist page later.
Yeah, good call. We don't need to read it aloud.
But wait, he goes, what's your number? And then I was like, this is a real story, blah, blah, blah. Let me know. And then I was like, okay, so what's your number? And he gave me his number. And then we just never.
Right.
I ended up calling lots of people, but this was not one of the paths we went down.
What a disappointment. Well, it's not too late.
And then hours later, why you wanted my num if not responding or calling?
Good question, bad boy Bushwick.
So I wrote back, I'm spam. I thought that would, like, make him feel better. Like, maybe this whole time I've been spam. And then question mark, what you mean by spam?
Oh,
he's never heard of spam.
Bad at internet.
What you mean by spam?
He confused. Listen, if we have 10 extra minutes at the end,
maybe we need to give him a call.
I apologize for being spam.
Oh,
do him the public service of explaining what spam is.
I know how to work the dump button. This could be great.
True. You will need it based on what I read on his profile.
Oh, man. Okay.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
We went down all these paths, and one of the paths was going by a friend's apartment, hearing a breakup story.
Mm-hmm.
One of the paths.
There were a lot of ideas.
Staging a heist.
Oh, yeah. This was a good one. I knew about a barbecue and a birthday party, separate happenings the same day, and I thought if we needed emergency group audio with a bunch of interesting people, that we could go to one of those. Andrea brilliantly thought we could show up, ask to record, and then pretend to kidnap everyone at the party.
It's really the last thing they'd expect.
Truly, a partygoer does not expect to be taken hostage at a daytime barbecue.
We're here to do a radio story. Get down. Give me your wallet. We'd spring break them. Spring breakers.
Yes. So we didn't do that. There were many other ideas. We eventually started down this path. We hung on to the word nonfiction, which it turns out was sort of a loose definition. That I think they said it should be mostly true, which then we started looking at local news, which is rife with stories, obviously, and tried a couple
on. Do we
want to
say what we want? How specific do we want to get now?
I think that we can not get more specific. If you want.
Yeah, I think I want you guys to have a process of figuring this out in your head.
Yeah.
And then we'll tell you more about our research process.
Cool.
After we hear it. Maybe play a few more entries from the contest.
Yeah. Do you want to do that first or do you want to play ours first?
I think ours first.
Okay, cool.
Maybe.
Let's do it, yeah.
Because otherwise
good.
They'll
I'm
just
excited.
Look so bad in comparison.
Which they do.
Also, if you hear the story and you're wild about it and you want to share it widely, I have the link to the SoundCloud of the story up on our WFMU playlist page.
Yeah.
Without further ado, here is our entry that we produced in just 24 hours for KCRW's radio race around the topic, The Last Thing You Would Ever Expect.
Steve?
Jennifer, right?
Hi, yeah.
Hi.
Good to see you.
I never know if I should hug or shake hands.
Have you been waiting here long?
It's no problem. I'm basically a professional waiter. I mean, that's already a job, but you know what I mean.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, like, I've waited for dates before. I know how to wait. So okay. Don't worry, is what I mean.
Okay. Well, you work in real estate, right?
Yeah, and you're in ads, right?
What? Yeah, I'm an advertising executive.
Okay. I just gotta stop this for a second. I gotta ask you how in the world you're single, because you're like the most beautiful person of any kind I've ever talked to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Really? A person of any kind?
Well, anywhere. I talked to I saw a model once.
Did you get a real good look?
You know, I don't know what kind of model she was. The point is, she was like the sort of thing you see in a magazine, and she doesn't hold a candle to you.
Oh, thank you. It's hard. It's hard to be so busy.
Sure.
And also, I mean, I'm divorced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to freak you out or anything. I've been a little bit of a serial dater recently, but it's not because of me. It's because of the circumstance.
No, no, I see.
I know how it looks.
Well, what's the circumstance? You got an internet connection and a picture of you smiling?
It's just easier than it used to be to go on a bunch of dates. Uh-huh. And
you know, I hope this isn't weird, but I've been on so many first dates this year. And I don't care if you have cousins. I don't really want to know about your dog's name.
Well, okay, so what do you have in mind?
What do you think happens when we die?
Oh, wow, you weren't kidding, huh? You know what? I don't think about that much. When I was a kid, I thought about it all the time, but I don't think about it much.
Why not?
I kind of feel like nobody I know is going to die.
You know, the only person I've known who's died has been my grandmother. And I think that when she went, she was ready to go. So I think it's like when you finish a life, you go and you start something new, a new journey somewhere.
Like moving to Portland.
I would never.
Yeah, but just for instance, like moving to another place.
Maybe another planet.
It's like there's a bunch of grandmas on Jupiter.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you think would make you ready?
I would not mind having a little more money and a lot more clothes, but basically, you know, I've traveled everywhere. I accomplished everything I want. All I'd really like to do is just live forever like this.
You mean on this date?
Yeah.
Honestly. I wouldn't mind. I'll be putting some cards out there. Yeah. I wouldn't mind doing this. I don't know about forever. Maybe 100 years.
100 years?
Yeah. I'll take 100 years.
If you can do it for another 100 years, why don't you at least come back to my apartment and I'll show you the view.
Thanks for inviting me up.
Cheers.
I gotta tell you, I think this is one of those nights that you'll remember forever.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know it's not over. I hope it's not over yet. But
yeah. Well, I just wanted to bring you up here. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great apartment.
When I saw this balcony, I knew I had to take it. It's so rare to find outside space in New York. I like to sit up here during the sunrise or the sunset to look at the East River. The building was built in the 1930s. It reminds me sort of Breakfast at Tiffany's. I like to come up here and think of Audrey Hepburn. And now you know an embarrassing fact about me.
Oh, that's not embarrassing. Oh, I pretend I'm Audrey Hepburn all the time.
You don't get those kind of beauties anymore.
No, I guess not. I get Anne Hathaway.
No.
I think that's the closest we get. I agree that we don't get
No one touches Audrey Hepburn.
Or maybe you're the closest we have.
Oh, yeah. Well, stop. Stop.
Oh, my God. Evel Knievel. Smoking a cigarette on the edge of a balcony.
We live in this vertical city where there are always heights below us.
Yeah, exactly. And we forget how dangerous they are. They're like trains. It's like the subway. It's like all those subway deaths. We forget that these things are lethal.
I think you just get used to it.
Right now, you're engaging literally in more dangerous behaviors than I ever have in my whole life combined.
Look, that thing looks unstable. Maybe
no,
it won't get down.
No, I do it all the time. So how early do you have to get up tomorrow morning?
This piece was produced by Like Radio as part of the 24-hour radio race from KCRW's Independent Producer Project.
35-year-old Jennifer Rossoff was on a date at about 1 o'clock this morning. A neighbor said the victim was sitting on the railing of her 17th-floor balcony when it suddenly buckled and then gave way, her body landing on scaffolding just outside her building on East 57th Street.
The 35-year-old was on a first date, smoking a cigarette in the outdoor space just before 1 this morning. Even though her date reportedly asked her not to do it, authorities say Rossoff sat on the balcony railing.
Everybody loved her. My children thought she was hung on the moon. She did charity work. I just talked to her yesterday. We're just in shock.
And that's it.
Sure is.
So tell us on the WFMU playlist page what you think of our entry in KCRW's 24-hour radio race. I'm looking at your comments now, and would love some feedback.
Yeah.
I've been hearing just really mixed stuff.
Yeah.
Like, some people realize about halfway through that this is based on a real news story, which it is, and have a hard time listening.
Yeah.
Some people thought this was real.
Yes, I emailed it around if we were finished, and I got a couple of responses back, like, how did you get this audio? How did you do that? And it's a reenactment. I think we called it an imagining. But we did use a lot of we used a lot of news reports. We used details from the reporting on the funeral. Like, a lot of what Jennifer says is things that her family said she said and things like that. And all the details that she says are true and the circumstances are totally true.
So there was this one line where she said, all I want is more money, more clothes, and to live forever. And that was
that was from a letter she had written one of her cousins that one of her cousins wrote or read at her funeral service. And we Laura, our other producer, was obsessed with the story. She followed it very closely. And it's a story, it's a very New York-y story. It's a very, like, strikes a chord with women, dating women in the city too. But I feel for the guy also. Like, I can't imagine. When I was looking through the archival for that little montage at the end, I was really hoping that there was a description of what he had done after he left, which was in some of the tabloid stories, which was run through the lobby screaming, my friend fell, which is unimaginable. And it's his neighborhood too. They live very close to each other in that neighborhood. So can he, a lot of questions for that man. I feel for him so much. And for her family, of course.
Yeah. On the playlist page, Danny D says, makes for hell of a story for that guy's next date.
Yeah, we were talking about that. Like, will he tell this story? No. When can he go on a date again? It's so hard to imagine. Yeah.
Greg says, that story was a bait and switch in the level of From Dusk Till Dawn.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the glowing one observed that the guy sounds like he has a cold. And she said, and he said, at least you didn't catch the cold from that guy. Yeah, it's just a heavy one. Like, if I comb the other submissions to the 24-hour radio contest, all entries created in just 24 hours after that prompt, some of them are really hard to listen to for other reasons because they're terrible. There's one I do like, and I'm just going to give you guys a quick teaser. This is The Letter by Dennis Conroe.
A few months ago, I bought this old house in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. It was built in 1902, and it's one of those huge three-story houses that has a lot of history. Over the years, many people have lived in this house. The neighborhood has changed from rich to poor and back again more than a few times. I'm in the middle right now of restoring the house back to its 1900s glory, but with a few modern conveniences. For example, last week I cut a hole in the ceiling to install a new light fixture, which meant running wires through the walls and down to the basement. I was standing on a bucket to reach the place where the stone foundation meets the wood sill plate. I slipped a little and wound up moving a rock, and beneath that rock was a letter. It was old. The handwriting looked antique, and parts of the letter had been damaged by time, rats, water, or human hands, and pages were missing, so it was a bit disjointed. I called out to my roommate, and together we read it. I was expecting some kind of sweet, innocent letter from a soldier to his sweetie back home, but what I found was something much, much different. Maybe I should just read it. Here's a transcription of what we found. Sunday afternoon. Dear Gertie,
since I last saw you, I moved to the country, and it is sure dead out here. You know, when I lived in the city, we used to have some dandy times and wild parties. And now, when I get close to a boy, I get so nervous. And if a man is around, Mother jumps in. Lately, Mother never misses a chance to cheat on Father. For instance, the other day, a good-looking man came to our door and asked for Father. He said he was a lodge brother and a very good friend of Father's.
Hello, miss. Is Oswald at home? I'm George Clegg, and I'm in the Elks Lodge with your husband. I hate to trouble you, ma'am, but, you know, with the stock market and all, I'm kind of broke. I wondered if you could show me a little bit of kindness.
Mother invited him to dinner, and he accepted.
Well, thank you very much, miss.
As my roommate and I read the letter, we didn't really know what to think. It was a lot less innocent than I was expecting.
Later, while getting dinner ready, the stranger had called.
And it does get way less innocent. it's one I recommend you guys all head over to the KCRW 24-hour radio race and take a listen to. But don't listen to anything else.
Those are the two best ones.
Yeah. What else? We heard lots of people who would tell a story, and then there'd be a record scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And then a
lot of sound
surprise.
Effects, generally.
We went to a bar. Glug, 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 glug.
Yeah. It was a great idea for a contest.
Yeah.
It got 100 people to do a thing over 24 hours. And they did a cool thing. They kept a constantly updating Facebook group, which was nice to check in with.
Agreed. And it made radio making seem kind of cool.
Yeah.
Which has been kind of the fun of this experience.
Totally.
Of doing this show and having you here, making that story with you. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Andrea. What a pleasure this has been.
Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
So that's all for today's show. I'm Andrea Salenzi, and I've had a blast filling in these past 4 weeks for Benjamin Walker. Let me know what you thought of the shows we've done, and I'll keep you in the loop about future radio I'm making. My email is andrea@freemusicarchive.org, or you can find me at Andrea Salenzi on Twitter. You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, online at WFMU.org, and in Rockland County at 91.9 FM. Stay tuned for Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show.
Rose. listening to WFMU, and it's time right now for the Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. You just heard right there Coach Longlegs with the track, All You Have to Do Is Try. And thank you so much, Coach Longlegs, for mentioning Nardwar and Lisa Marr. And actually, Nardwar and Lisa Marr are people. Yes, I'm Nardwar, the Human Serviette. But to help explain who Lisa Marr is, we have a special guest on the Nardwar, the Human Serviette radio show. Hello, are you there, special guest?
I am here.
Who are you?
I'm Mark Kleiner, and thank you for having me on Nardwar. It was just reminding me, as you mentioned that song, the Danger Danger rap song. You went from Ellie Guns to Enough's Enough when you partied with Poison on the back of their bus. Remember?
Yes, you've taught me so much about metal and stuff, but first, who are you exactly? Could you move a bit closer to the mic, and could you tell the people the importance of them mentioning Nardwar and Lisa Marr?
Well, Lisa Marr is a much-loved fixture, songwriter, the leader of Cub from the 1990s here in Vancouver. I mean, and of course, Nardwar is you. And so, what do you want me to say?
Well, I guess I was just saying, you've been on the Nardwar to Human Serviette radio show a few times, but your mic technique is terrible, Mark. Could you turn it and then get a bit close to
okay,
the mic.
Okay, into the diaphragm
yes,
of the mic?
Yeah, exactly.
How's that? Is that better?
That's very much better. Maybe we should do this all over again. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Nardwar. Thanks for having me on. Great to be here.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Mark Kleiner. And Mark, you've taught me quite a bit about metal. At first, I only like punk rock. How did I meet you?
Actually, we met just down around the corner here 22 years ago, I believe. In fact, in 1991, I had written an article on the Monkees for Discorder magazine. It was the 25th anniversary of the Monkees, and I was just commenting it how the 25-year was not getting as much attention as the 20-year. And it was an okay article. It had a picture of Davy Jones poolside in Speedos and other highlights. And so that was sort of how you knew I had an interest in 60s stuff. So we just kind of bonded on that. Shortly thereafter, we were interviewing the Strawberry Alarm Clock. Remember that?
You hooked me up with an interview with the Strawberry Alarm Clock.
Exactly. Yeah, I did a separate interview. Then you talked with them. They wouldn't spill the dirt for me, but they would for you. That's what I recall about that. And we had a lot of fun. And then where did it go from there? I guess 1993, I think we began to have conversations about the state of hair metal. And I just suggested to you that hair metal was the true punk rock in the early 90s. And you agreed. And so we interviewed Slick Toxic. And
there was a rumor that they were going to change their name. It was a Canadian heavy metal band, Slick Toxic.
Yes.
And you heard there was a rumor to capitalize on the grunge punk movement, they were going to change their name to Slack Toxic.
Exactly.
Which we still kind of think about every time we say the name of their band.
It's true, we do. And they had just released a very grunge inflected album, which I Hate My Manager, wasn't that one of them? I Want to Blow My Manager Away was one of the songs. They had actually, we told a story and asked them about that. Their bass player from the first album, Doing the Nasty, they were kind of the Canadian Guns N' Roses. The night of the Juno Awards, they took the EMI company limousine, the bass player at the wheels, and they I believe they took out a bunch of cars, and they crashed the limousine, and all the royalties from the first album were basically spent on the ensuing mess. So the bass player was canned, and then they made this grunge album, and not a lot happened to them after that, although they may be reuniting, I don't know. So,
and of course you love Danger Danger, so eventually we had to do an interview with Danger Danger. And again, that couplet is one of your favorites, isn't it?
Well, I think you've dropped it a few times too. It is on the second Danger Danger album, the kind of a rap song they do on there. And so Bruno Ravel kindly spoke to us and told us about No Dice Records. And we talked to him. We talked to a whole bunch of metal luminaries. We spoke twice with Janie Lane, extended interviews once. I remember they were in Kentucky on tour, touring the Ultraphobic album. And then they came up to Surrey, BC. And I think we attended that show. You were at that show as well, right?
Yes, I remember Janie Lane saying to the audience, I've never heard 27 people make this much noise.
Okay, that was Donnie V. That was Enough's Enough at the same bar, Studebaker's.
Oh, sorry. I got the two bands mixed up. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Warrant had a lot more people out at the show. Enough's Enough had a very small crowd, but it was an awesome night. That's when we spent the rest of the night on the Enough's Enough tour bus swapping tales with Donnie and Chip Zinoff, who actually, after the interview, sent you a thank you postcard, right? In days when you didn't get a lot of thank yous.
It was incredible to get somebody having something sent to me, especially just for doing an interview, especially from a double-tinged rock band name. Like, Enough's Enough, Danger, Danger. You introduced me to these bands, again, because you're like, hey, Nardwar, Rancid, punk is popular. What's the true underground in the mid-90s?
Right, right. I think it was second tier double named, right? It was like Danger Danger, Enough's Enough. It's kind of like that double monikered, right?
And you introduced me to the Monkees. Mm-hmm. Again, if people want to, well, this interview you did with Warren, where can people hear it? Check out nardwar.com. And also you can check out my interviews with the Monkees. You set me up with Mickey Dolenz too. You always know this stuff. Like, usually when you do an interview, you approach a publicist, but you just know, don't you, Mark? You just know.
Well, Mickey was in Vancouver in 1991 filming a game show called Acting Crazy, and I'd received a this was the pre-internet era, so I'd receive a postcard from Maggie McManus of Monkey Business Fans Inc. saying he would be in town, and I called up the game show, the producer, and she basically I asked if I could come in and sit in the audience, and she basically blew me off, and so I let you know, and so we turned up at the studio, and you asked Mickey Dolenz a bunch of questions, and
for a guy that doesn't know a lot about the Monkees, you sure know a lot about the Monkees.
Yes.
And I knew a lot about the Monkees because of you, Mark Kleins Kleiner.